this anyway, just for kicks. Him.
Welcome to season 3, episode 2 of the Tales from the Air podcast. We are taking a little bit of a different route today. I am your host, Rob Johnson, and we are going to remember, discuss the 9/11 terrorist attacks that happened 24 years ago, and really kind of walk you through more of what that day meant for me, just some observations, some things I was doing. And then finally, we'll talk a little bit about how the events of 9/11 changed air travel. And so that's what we're going to focus on. As always, you can find us wherever you find podcasts, Apple Podcast, YouTube, Spotify, all the different venues where you can pick up podcasts. If you can, like, or if you want, like, subscribe, pass along to your friends. I have been very humbled by the responses I get via email, which, by the way, talesfromtheair@gmail.com is where you can get a note to me. But appreciate the kind words from friends and strangers alike. I've been overwhelmed with the response. So thank you for that. So, as I mentioned earlier, it has been 24 years since the U.S. was attacked by terrorists, and this episode is a departure from what I typically discuss. And so, you know, if you're tuning in to kind of get some tidbits on travel and some industry news, this is not the week for you, but I encourage you to listen because I think you'll find it interesting. Entertaining is the wrong word, but I think you'll find it interesting. To get this thing started, we've got to go back to, for me, August of 2001. And in August of 2001, I had just created a government affairs position for a company I was working with. I was a trainer, and one of my close friends, who's a close friend today, he and I were having lunch at Chili's there in Overland Park. And on the, literally, as many stories go like this, on the back of a napkin, I actually carry a notebook with me now when I go to lunches like this so I can actually see what I wrote. But on the back of a napkin, we kind of sketched out what this government affairs position would look like. I took it to the CEO and started in mid-August of 2001. And getting started, quite frankly, I had no idea what I was doing. So I made a lot of phone calls and sent a lot of emails and did a lot of research. And part of that research, I planned a trip to go down and see an old friend who was a state representative and a pharmacist. And we planned that for Tuesday, September 11th. Is when we set on that date. And so you fast forward to the morning of 9/11, and just to honestly started out like every other morning. At the time, I was single. I was living in an apartment up in north of the river. If you're familiar with Kansas City, just off of I-29 and Berry Road. And I was also working part-time, more of a flex position. Today they call it a side hustle, Thrifty Rental Car, which I had worked at previously as well, but had continued to work with them when I had availability. But I rented a car because I hated putting business miles on my personal car. I still hate doing that. I don't do it. I always rent a car when I can because I just hate putting the mileage on there. But drove my car to the airport. Because I was an employee, I was able to leave my car there and parked in the employee parking lot and picked up the rental car and was making my way to the office. And like I did most mornings then, and I can't recall, I should have done this a little bit of research and I didn't. I can't remember the radio dial, the station they were on, but I was listening to the Don Imus radio show out of New York that morning as I was making my way to the office, and it was I can't recall how far I had gotten in the trip, but it was about 7:50 Central Time. They had a sports anchor who had the day off, a gentleman by the name of Warner Wolf, who called in and he and his wife lived near, the World Trade Center complex. And he called in because he was seeing all the chaos. And at that point, a plane had hit, the North Tower, at that point. And, all the speculation at that point was that it was a small plane and the pilot had to have had some sort of medical emergency or something because it was a beautiful, clear day, and how could this have happened and all that. I mean, that was where everyone's head went to initially, and that's just kind of where things were. Now, it is important to remember that the World Trade Center had been attacked 8 years earlier in February of 1993. A van with explosives, I don't recall how much, it was significant. The van was detonated in a parking structure underneath the World Trade Center, created a crater that was, I believe, several stories deep, and six people were killed. And so, that was something that, even though 8 years had passed, it was still, especially for those in the area, they remembered that. They remembered that day and the chaos and what was next and all that. So having this plane hit the World Trade Center, I'm sure for some, sparked a lot of fears and thoughts and whatnot. And at that point, really, for all intents and purposes, we didn't know. Speculation was really running rampant. What's interesting is at that point, when that news started coming in, I don't recall much of the rest of the drive into the office. I got parked and went into the building we were in, which was at the time a building that was partially filled with some salespeople and also had customer service within. But there was a small conference room on the floor that I was on. And there was a tiny TV, a very small TV in there, and everyone was really kind of huddled in that room, and the cubicle where I sat was pretty close to that conference room, so I dropped my stuff and joined everyone in the conference room. And it was unreal. It was as if it really wasn't happening. As we were gathering in there, watching that, no one really spoke a word. Except for the occasional, I can't believe this. And at this point, smoke's pouring out of the North Tower and all that. And at that point, we didn't really understand the full scope of what was happening. In fact, my boss was scheduled to fly out of Kansas City later that day and really thought he would, really thought that would still occur. But then the second plane hit. And most people have seen the video now of the FDNY fireman performing what appears to be an inspection at an intersection. And you see them look up and the camera follows the first plane when it hits the tower. And that came about, I don't recall how much after 9/11, but, you know, initially, it was believed very few people saw the first plane hit. And it wasn't until that video came out that you had really clear footage of that jet hitting the World Trade Center. However, the second plane, that was on live TV. And anyone who was watching had a TV on or were like us, multiple people gathered around a TV, you saw and really watched in awe. And it was at that moment, you know, I knew we were under attack. I mean, you saw that commercial jet. At the time, you didn't know how big it was, but it was a commercial airplane hit the World Trade Center and explode. And I think back, and I'll say that multiple times during this podcast, I can't imagine, and I didn't think about this at the time, it was much after, but being an air traffic controller that day, or I can't imagine working for so many of the different agencies in DC that people turn to, or those that were looking, you know, at those agencies for answers. We were in uncharted water. And, you know, at this time, the Department of Homeland Security didn't exist. So you had all these agencies that were, needing to share information. And that's really how the Department of Homeland Security evolved, was it was clear that communication wasn't being communicated as quickly as it needed to be. It was absolutely incomprehensible to see what we were seeing on this little TV. You saw people running out of the buildings. You saw emergency personnel running into the building. I mean, it was unfathomable. It really was. You know, at different points during that day, I thought about my grandparents and what they would have thought, what they were feeling at the time around Pearl Harbor. And in preparation for this podcast, I was doing some quick math. And, you know, we studied Pearl Harbor in school and recognized the importance of, you know, what it meant for America, and especially given where we were with, you know, other crises in the world, in Europe and whatnot. But, you know, it still seemed like a really long time ago. And, you know, I was born in 1970, and I look at that day of 9/11, and I was thinking, people born 30 years from now, 31 years from now, when they're studying 9/11 in school, what's that going to look like for them? Are they going to understand the magnitude and impact that day had on the people that were here? And that really brought it home for me when you look at the age differences and all that. So, so I remember really almost every detail of that day, as weird as it sounds, but I don't recall if I ate lunch that day. Isn't that funny? And you know, as I was putting notes together for this episode, I remember just little things, but I couldn't remember if I ate. Now, I made the observation that when the second plane hit the tower, I knew we were under attack, and I'll tell you, when it was reported that the plane hit the Pentagon, that drove it home even more for me from the standpoint of the United States is under attack. And for those of you that weren't around on 9/11, you know, the rumors that came in after the Pentagon was hit, you know, the Sears Tower, which is now the Wilson Tower in Chicago. Sorry, Chicago people. I know you always call it the Sears Tower, but the Sears Tower, it was rumors that was a target. The Transamerica building in San Francisco. There were buildings in Los Angeles. I mean, it was unbelievable. And you know, at that point, because of what we had experienced, you couldn't really discount any rumors at all. And, you know, when the FAA decided to shut down air traffic in the United States, I mean, that was, I mean, just unbelievable. I mean, it happened so quickly. And to get all those planes grounded, I mean, it was an unbelievable morning. So I want to give you just a little perspective, put a timeline to the day, and this is how I look at it. And I put these times down here, and events started at 8:46 a.m. Eastern time on 9/11. That's when American Airlines Flight 11 crashed into the North Tower. The final tower, the North Tower, collapsed at 10:28 a.m. Eastern time. When you look at that window of time, less than 2 hours from start to finish. You think about a typical morning of getting up and maybe fixing the family breakfast or helping fix the family breakfast and feeding dogs and getting dogs outside and getting yourself ready and getting kids off to school and all that. All that can be packed into that window of time. So as I mentioned, at 8:46 a.m. Eastern time, the North Tower of the Twin Towers was attacked when American Airlines Flight 11 crashed into floors 93 through 99. So six floors came in at not as much of an angle as the United Flight 175. That occurred at 9:03. So people were, you know, trying to figure out, getting their arms around what happened at 8:46, and just a little bit more than 15 minutes later, the South Tower was attacked with United Airlines crashing into floors 77 through 85 of that tower. And then at 9:37, so just a little bit more than half an hour from that point, I mean, at that point, it was just utter chaos. The Pentagon was attacked when American Flight 77 destroyed a large section of the Department of Defense. And then at 9:59, the South Tower collapsed. And watching that on live TV was, I mean, it was unbelievable. I mean, it was insane to watch that. At 10:03, so 4 minutes later, Flight 93 crashed in Pennsylvania. Conventional wisdom says that plane was bound for most likely the U.S. Capitol. And the people on board that flight were able to connect with loved ones on the ground, hear about what was happening in New York, and what would happen. I don't know if they knew what happened in Washington at that point, but what happened in New York. And they felt, because that plane had been hijacked, they were on a course for a similar attack. Excuse me. Get a drink of water there. And then finally at 10:28, the North Tower collapsed. And again, watching that unfold, seeing these two huge structures collapse was just absolutely unbelievable. And watching that unfold that day. And again, I remember every bit of that like it was yesterday. So all told, 3,000 people were murdered that day. Passengers and crew on the planes, people on the towers, people in the Pentagon, and first responders. But I would argue the unknown number is the people terrorized and dealing with the aftermath of what occurred that day. We don't know what that number is. That number goes well beyond 3,000. I think of those people who made the decision they were never going to go into the city again because they didn't want to be put in a situation where they could be in harm's way. I think of the young children whose parents went off to work that morning in one of the towers or at the Pentagon, and that parent never came home. They really never got to know their parent because of what happened. I mean, just the stories are endless of the impact of what occurred that day. So it really is something that I think about often. I think about it significantly more on the date, of remembrance of 9/11. And it is something that I will carry the balance of my days because it's just something that really was unbelievable. It really was. So I want to get into kind of moving through after, you know, those facts, those details. So that getting back to that day, I did keep the dinner I had scheduled. The drive down to Emporia, about an hour and a half, was quite surreal. I recall how little car traffic or truck traffic there was on the interstate. A lot of people just were home and not out, and it was really interesting. I also recall seeing how some gas stations had jacked up their prices. That was very temporary. The government did a really good job of stepping in and saying, you know, gouging would not be allowed, and you know, there was, you know, plenty of, you know, reserves, and if we did get into a crisis, there was no need to inflate the price of fuel. Except for a couple military jets, the skies were completely empty. And I noticed that much more on the drive back to Kansas City that night when it was dark versus the drive down. But that was really interesting as well to see how empty and clear the skies were. What I knew is the world we knew the day before no longer existed. America would embark on a new chapter. And I didn't know what that would look like. No one knew what that would look like. But it was something that was our new normal. So everybody was understandably on edge in the days and weeks and months following the attacks. I recall the first plane trip I took was for work to Corpus Christi, Texas via Houston. None of the flights were full. On the plane, everyone was kind of looking around at everybody else, just kind of mindful of what was going on. It was late 2001. Excuse me. Apologize for that. I was up late watching football last night. I'm sorry, that was the week after, once they opened up air travel in late, very tail end of September 2001. I took my first trip to DC for my new job, and Reagan National was closed until sometime in October. So I flew into Baltimore, and one of the things I vividly recall was seeing soldiers in the terminal with M16s, and that really hit me. I mean, just seeing that image was something that really, really stuck out. I took the train down to Washington, and towards the end of my trip, I had rented a car at Washington National Airport. The airport was closed, like I said, to commercial traffic, but you were able to access the rental car facilities. And I will tell you, it was unbelievably haunting to walk through the airport in the afternoon and there was no one in it. Everything was closed, no passengers. I mean, it was, you saw very few people. And to be in that airport, which is usually hustling and bustling, to walk through and see it empty for all intents and purposes was really something. So that was just a couple images from that trip I wanted to share. Moving on to another subject, I want to share as it relates to 9/11. If you have the chance to go to New York City for work or pleasure, it doesn't matter, I encourage you to visit the 9/11 Memorial and Museum. I've been twice. It is very moving and really well done. They did a very respectful yet informative job of the museum. It's done very well. The first time I went, I was by myself, and it was a little overwhelming, to be honest with you. I'm trying to think what year it was that I went, but it was emotionally a lot. The second time, I was with my wife, fiance at the time, and some friends, and it was mentally exhausting, but I'm glad I got to see it a second time. I had a little bit different perspective seeing it the second time. For those that were, you know, directly impacted by 9/11, I'll tell you, I would completely understand if that's something you're unable to go do. It is very emotional. I think it would be, I don't know if I would do it if I had lost someone in the terrorist attacks. It may be challenging for me. I don't know. I don't want to speculate whether I would or wouldn't, but I don't know. But I truly understand those that aren't able to go, who maybe even didn't lose someone that day, but were maybe in the city and just dealt with everything that went on that day. I get it. So very emotional. I've also been to the memorial at the Pentagon, and it too is very moving. Definitely worth adding to the list of, as you navigate memorials in Washington. So I end this section on these two notes. First one, in May of 2001, I was in New York City for the first time for work, and I asked the customers I was seeing, what are some must-sees in New York? I had my couple evenings free before I headed home, and one of the things they suggested was going to the observation deck at the South Tower, and I chose not to go. I was doing other things, and they were in closer proximity to one another, and I was like, I'll see that on a future trip. And, you know, that's one of the things I thought about on 9/11 is, you know, I will never get to see that. And I regret that. So now when locals recommend I see something, I go see it. You don't know what the future holds. So there's an old adage, don't put off to tomorrow what you can do today, or something to that effect. There go the dogs. That means a delivery is showing up. So I apologize for that. So the second point I wanted to make, in late fall of 2001, my god sister, who went to the same company with me, she was in New York City for work, and she got me an FDNY t-shirt. I wore it often for years. Then as it started to show a little age, I wore it occasionally. Now, I only wear it on 9/11. But the shirt means a lot to me, not just what it represents as it relates to 9/11, but now it means even more since my god sister passed away in 2021. When the shirt becomes unwearable, and we're not there yet, but it's going to get reach that point. I plan to frame it and hang it in my office. But I wanted to share those two things. So I'm going to end there on that point, and then I want to just talk a little bit about some security protocols we saw as it relates to travel. So 9/11. Brought about a lot of security changes in the U.S. Some of them have diminished over time. But after 9/11, we saw air marshals. We saw increased security before walking to your gate at the security checkpoint. We saw random checks at the gate for a period of time. For all flights going into Washington National and the New York City airports, all passengers had to remain seated for the last 30 minutes of the flight. And that went on for quite a while. I know I'm missing some others as it relates to 9/11, but it absolutely had a tremendous impact on policy decisions and public opinion. You know, security is still something that's top of mind. It always will be, but we've seen some things being eased, partially due to a level of comfort. Also, some of it too is technology has improved over the last 24 years to where we don't need to have all of those pieces in place. So, you know, this is 9/11's a day that is really important to me, and it's something that will forever be etched in my mind, and we'll pause for at different points through the year, but for sure on 9/11, and just think about the sacrifice that was made. Think about what occurred that day, and you know, I'll end on this note. I was talking with a good friend of mine that morning of 9/11, and I believe it was after the final tower had collapsed, and I made the observation to him. I said, imagine if you isolate and just pull out the Flight 93 flight being hijacked, and then forget about passengers rushing the cockpit and the plane crashing, but imagine the plane crashing, but that plane was hijacked. That in and of itself would have been a huge news story. Above the fold, talked about for days, everybody would be talking about it. Just that one single isolated event. But when you think about four different planes crashing, three of them into places that as Americans we took for granted, thought there's no way something would happen like this. And you look at the loss of life, you look at the first responders that put their own lives at risk. Many of them didn't make it out. I mean, just it is absolutely unbelievable, and it's sometimes hard to get your arms wrapped around all the events that day. It's almost too much. And so I ask that is you know, it's appropriate for you to think about those that were impacted by that day. Think of something you could do on the next anniversary of 9/11, and we'll talk soon. Until next time, this is Rob Johnson, and you've been listening to Tales from the Air. Thank you, and see you next time. She drove southbound 95 straight through.